Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business. Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. I'm Jane Atkinson, your host. Now, many of you have already written a book. Some of you might be thinking about it, or perhaps even thinking next book. You know, I'm personally right in smack dab in the middle of this kind of decision-making process, trying to decide, should I do book number 5? But for those of you who are navigating the book process, we have Erin Casey here to help us walk through the options for book publishing and development.
Hi. Welcome, thanks so Erin. Much for having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you back on the show. This is back by popular demand performance. So, Erin, just for those folks who maybe didn't listen to the last one or don't remember what it was, because I'm sure it was well over a year ago, tell us a little bit about your company. This is the world that you live in, right?
It is. It is. My company is called My Writers Connection, and you can find it online, mywritersconnection.com. And what we do is work with small publishers as well as independent authors and help them go from all the way from the very beginning, like the content development and even ghostwriting if it's requested, all the way through to the final files for the printer and then supplying, you know, ebook files, or we can do audiobooks. So it's the whole, everything that you need to get your book into the world.
It's almost like, because sometimes if you think about writing a book, you have to decide who's going to be the general contractor on this project. You know, the editing is one subcontracting piece. The book design is going to be another piece. The actually getting it all ready for print is like a whole nother ball of wax. Like all of these pieces are really intricate. I love, you call it indie publishing. I think my industry knows it a little bit as self-publishing as well as indie publishing. I just like that term. It feels independent, you know?
Well, that's it. Self-publishing sometimes has a stigma to it, or it has in the past had a stigma to it where people think, oh, you know, it's like if you can't do, then you teach. Well, it's you can't publish, so you self-publish. And that's not the case anymore, but the indie publishing kind of removes that altogether.
Okay.
And so that's why
I like that term even more now. I knew I liked it because I like the term indie films and what have you. So
that's
really cool. All right. So let's take a look at indie publishing in terms of, you know, what are the advantages? I know that there's a financial advantage, and I also know that in today's world, we don't have to have a basement full of books. You know,
right.
That's not the way things operate anymore. So let's talk about the advantage of indie publishing.
Sure. So I think that there's a few. One, it's faster than traditional publishing.
Yes.
So, you know, if you want your book to be part of your business plan or part of your marketing strategy as a speaker, and you know you have an event coming up 6 to 8 months, 12 months away, going the traditional route, you may not have that book ready. I mean, if you're a major celebrity, a publisher can get it done quickly.
Yeah.
But aside from that, if you're just, you know, a normal person, even if you've got a great business, it can take 18 to 24 months after you have the book deal.
Yeah.
So, and that's it. So it's just, it's such a long lead time that it can be frustrating, and you feel like you're losing out on something whenever you don't have that book ready.
Right.
So that's one of my top ones, is for, especially for people who have
timeline.
Yeah,
for sure. And you know, you really, when you've got an idea and you've got your baby, you don't want to have an 18-month pregnancy.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You really want to give birth to that baby like as fast as humanly possible. And you would think that the book industry would have kind of figured that out and shortened up the timelines. And I do believe that there are some publishers who are, but it's because they're selling in advance. They have the catalogs and people go to the book expos to buy books. And, you know, there's just so many, it's such a dysfunctional industry because there's so many middlemen and distributors and things like that that get involved. I find the biggest advantage of indie book publishing, and let me give people some food for thought on this, is the idea of being able to capture all of the names and email addresses of the people who are reading your book. A lot of people think I'm going to be so famous because I'm going to have my book go bestseller on Amazon. But guess what? When you go bestseller on Amazon and not through your own website, you're actually giving up all those names and email addresses of people who will know, like, and trust you.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I often advise for authors to do, even if they're going to, you know, sell through other outlets, mm-hmm. is to offer something that people can download or use with the book, or extra resources, or maybe all the links that are in your book.
Yeah.
Have a page on your website and have that be a place where you can capture emails.
Yeah, draw them in. For sure. That's a big miss. And I see a lot of big names doing that. Mm-hmm. Mel Robbins in the 5-second rule, you know, continuously draws you back to her offer, whatever
right.
that offer. You know, Brendan Burchard, the same thing, continuously draws you back to his offer because he wants to capture your name and email address. What do you think in terms of books, establishing people from a credibility standpoint, do you think it matters as much anymore as it used to that people don't have HarperCollins on their book?
Not in most industries. So there may be a few holdouts, maybe some academic spaces, like high academic spaces, like
yep.
university level and above.
Okay.
There's still some snobbery, if you want to put it that way,
okay.
about it. But in most
we'll call them indie snobs.
That's right. Well, and in most cases, though, you don't go look and see who it's published by. I mean, if you're an author, you might care, like, but your general reader is not going to care who it's published by. If it looks good, if it reads well,
yeah.
if it hits their needs, they're not going to care who it's published by. So, no, I don't think that it matters so much anymore, except for some of those elitist type spaces.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think Seth Godin has certainly made it cooler, his own transition and help for authors. He recognized that the book industry was a bit broken. So what you just said about judging a book, let's talk about judging a book by its cover, because that is so important. Now, let's say I have an idea and I write my book and I'm like, oh, I'll just design the cover myself and then throw it up there on Amazon. What do you think about that?
I hate it.
Tell us how you really think here.
I know.
Don't hold
to be honest. Sorry. So, there are kids out there who know how to use software programs and they can probably put together something that looks even okay. But the reality is, it's just like working with people that are professionals in any industry.
Yeah.
A good cover designer is going to think about things that you wouldn't
yes.
even know to think about.
Yes.
So one of the things
we always have fine look on the shelf at a
right.
bookstore, that type of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a cover brief that we have people fill out that asks, what are your likes? What are your dislikes? Do you have any particular ideas? What's your vision? Because we want to know what people
yes.
want. But one of the common things that I see, and then we have to come back and pull back from, is people want a scene on the cover. They want like a mm-hmm. picture on the cover that tells
right.
the whole story. And it's a complicated story.
Right.
And if you look at it on the shelf, or if you look at it in that little bitty thumbnail size,
mm-hmm.
you can't tell what it is. You can't read the title. It's not going to be an effective sales piece for you, which
cool.
is what your cover is.
So it would the moral to that story be, don't ask your cover to try to do too much?
Right, right. I mean, it needs to sell,
mm-hmm.
but it can't be telling the whole story because it's
yeah.
going to confuse your potential buyer. Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
The bottom line is confused people don't buy. So they're not going to.
I love that line. And we use that line over here quite a bit. And my theory about that is if you're going to have a project done, find the best person for the job to do that project. And there's a very good chance that that is not you.
Well, that's it. That's it.
Unless your job in your previous life was book jacket designer,
right?
then that is not you.
Right. And I always tell people, even though you can do something, doesn't mean you should. Your time and money may be better spent elsewhere.
Yeah. Oh, Erin, it sounds like I'm just kind of reiterating your words all the time to my clients. So that's really good. Okay.
That's good. We're on the same page.
Yes, we certainly are. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. So let's talk about I'm just going through this negotiation, shout out to Frank, one of my clients, about a title and a subtitle.
Okay.
So we know that this is probably the most important piece of the whole puzzle, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the guidelines that I most often stick to and offer are that the title needs to be something that's memorable, something that catches somebody's attention. I like it short so that it is memorable. If it's too long, people can't remember. Even I was trying to think of the one, you know, the children's book, Alexander's The Really Bad or Rotten Day. It's a children's book, and it's a really long title. It's a cute little story, but even that one, even though it's kind of catchy, I can't remember the whole thing in the right order.
And here you are trying to remember it, and you cannot remember.
And I can't. So I like it. I like it short. You know, one word titles I think are awesome. Shorter, so that the memorable, and then the subtitle needs to have that with them statement. What's in it for me? Good. So tell the reader what they're going to get out of the book, and one of the ways one of my clients put it is that you can't be cute in both places. So you can maybe have something that's really catchy and clever in the title.
Right.
The subtitle better be succinct and say, this is what you're going to get out of this book.
That's very important. That's very important. I like that a lot. And when I talk to people about developing a promise statement for their website, oftentimes the book subtitle, I talk about the brand and the promise being very similar to the book title and the subtitle. The brand can have more kind of catchiness to it or stickiness to it and may not fill in every blank, but that subtitle or the promise should really tell you what you're getting. And we tend to, in that promise, go that talk about the idea of clear being better than clever.
And think about your keywords too. So if you can fit some keywords into your subtitle, the things that people are searching for, that's really helpful. If you can't fit them into the cover, I mean, on the front cover, make sure they get in on the back cover.
So, okay. So I have a question for you. Let's say you have an idea, and I'll give you an example. Someone who is perhaps putting out a sales book. You definitely want sales in hopefully in the title and perhaps something about closing business or whatever the results are in the subtitle. But what if you have developed some sort of formula that is unique to you? Could you put that formula right in the title, and as long as sales was there, that would be enough, like for people to just lean in with curiosity? Is that enough?
If it's not unclear. So like say you've got an acronym that you use in your book. If you're going to tie that acronym in because it's memorable, it needs to at least tie in so that people can understand it. Because
If your acronym is S-E-L-L, then you're probably in business. But if it's something else, then you might not be. Okay.
Right.
All right. I hear you.
But, you know, you see people a lot of times will have like the five steps too, or the, you know, whatever. And that's fine. Like, again, as long as it's clear, as long as it tells what they're going to get out of that book.
If you have five steps too in the title, not the subtitle, then are you still going to have a subtitle? Are you always going to have a subtitle?
I probably wouldn't make that the title.
Yeah.
I'd have to see the whole thing. I'd make that the subtitle.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We're on the same page about that too. Okay. Let's talk. Okay. So we were talking about being the general contractor of the project and then, you know, who are your subcontractors? It sounds like your company can take over the general contractor duties, which is really nice. Like managing the project and pushing it forward is a big part of it, right? You really want to get on some timelines and stick to those timelines. Otherwise, your book may take forever to get. What's the longest time period you've ever had with a client taking a book to get off the
goodness.
Ground?
I try to forget those. Come on.
Sorry to bring up that memory.
In general, we're running at about 5 to 6 months that when we get a rough manuscript and go through the editing process, and we do 3 levels of edit. We do the layout, the cover design, ebook files, all that, and get it out. So, that's an average. 5 to 6 months is average for us.
Yeah.
Longest, I mean, you know, I've had authors go AWOL for 4 and 6 months at a time, or a year at a time, and we, you know, we hang out and we don't just kick them to the curb, but we don't, you just have to wait in line. Then whenever you're ready to come back. So.
Yeah, exactly. You'll have to start over again. And it's hard to put something on the shelf for a year and then come back with the same kind of passion for it. Don't you, Phil? What do you think is, sorry, go ahead and answer that. And then I have a follow-up question already.
I do. And I think that goes back to, you know, when we talk about the traditional publishing route and how that can take a long time, sometimes you lose momentum.
Yes.
And if you're really, you know, into your speak, like if you're speaking or you're coaching and you're really into your message that you're delivering at that time, and then you write your book and you're all excited about it, and then you have to wait. I mean, I had one client
8 months.
As soon as his book was published, he went the traditional route. As soon as his book was published, he changed his branding. He changed his messaging. He missed out on a ton of sales because he just didn't market his book because he was bored with it by then.
Right.
So.
Wow. Okay. So thinking about that in terms of your passion for the project, would you say that the book writing process can be incredibly tedious if you're at all writing about something that you don't know or aren't passionate about?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like pulling teeth probably for you to kind of say, okay, I need more on this, and you're trying to build out your content. And I have found that I get really, really stunted in my moving forward on any project if I don't feel 100% confident in that topic area.
Right. And that's, you know, it's hard to sell something you don't believe in. It's hard to write something you don't believe in. So yeah, you want to, and most of the authors that we work with would be in a space where they'd be, they know their message, they're speakers, they're coaches, they're educators. So they have something that they're passionate about, and that's what their book is about. You go beyond that. I mean, there are people who do like research type books, and maybe they hit an area that they're not excited about, but that's not where I would focus. I'd spend my time on something I enjoyed.
Right. So. I had a deal come to me from the Dummies book people, and they wanted me to do a Get Paid to Speak for Dummies or something like that, and I just couldn't do it. You know, I looked at what they wanted, and they wanted me to go deep in a lot of areas that I just wasn't interested in, and I said, thanks, but I'm going to have to pass on this. And, you know, it would have been nice to have, like, more eyeballs, but sometimes I think you just have to do what's right for your business and walk away from things that aren't. And for those of you who have books inside of you that aren't going to support your speaking, let's talk about that, Erin, because that's to me what I see a lot of. Oh, I have two books on the go right now. One is on the topic that I speak about all the time. The other one is something completely separate about, you know, my daughter's path through childhood illness or something like that, something that they're not going to get paid for. What do you think about that?
You know, it depends on your goals. And if your goal is to build your business, I would focus on the one that you're building your business with. It's not to say that you should never write that book, but maybe you shouldn't try to do both at the same time. You know, the whole can't chase two rabbits at the same time. If your energy and your mind is split trying to go two different directions, you're not going to, it's harder to finish. It's harder to cross the finish line with either one of them. And you can't devote your time and attention the way that it should be.
Yeah, and I want to give everyone a vision who's thinking about writing a book. I want you to imagine, you know, in conference centers now, a lot of them have chairs that actually have room to put a book in. And I want you to imagine that you book a speaking engagement. Let's say you get paid $5,000, $7,500, $10,000, and then you add another $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 onto that bill by sending them a book with the contract and giving them the idea that they're going to. And a great question to ask your client is, how long would you like this message to last for? And if they say, well, just for this 45 minutes, then the book may be off the table. But if they say they want it to last for a long time, then you might be able to sell them on putting a book in everybody's hand. And that helps to raise your level of celebrity. And when you say, reach down underneath your seat and you will get a copy, then people get so excited. And then the people who supply the book are the heroes. And I think it's just really a nice feeling, don't you, Erin, to
absolutely
be able to try to get the book book into as many hands of as many people as possible.
Well, if you think about it, if you've got, you know, 100 or 1,000 people in the audience, exactly, and they all have a copy of your book, that's 100 or 1,000 people who are out there promoting you. Yeah. So maybe they read the book themselves. Maybe they pass the book on to somebody else. Maybe they tell five of their friends, oh, hey, you've got to read this book. So, and there could be somebody else that's in the audience that has an event and they read your book and they're like, hey, I need them to come speak at my event. So yeah, I think it's absolutely, even if you're not making what you would make on the, like on a typical sale of a book, mm-hmm. even if you discount it so that you can get those books into those people's hands, I think it's totally worth it.
Yeah. And your book is your ticket into the next organization. And so some people, and I've heard people say, just write any book. It doesn't matter how good it is. And I don't really believe in that philosophy. I trust you don't either.
Mm-mm, no, no, because just like people judge a book by its cover, they judge you by your book.
Yeah. So we want to do a good book. And I think, though, you should have it in mind whether or not this book is going to lead you into a speaking engagement or perhaps follow you out of one. So will you sell it back of the room and people will take it home because they want a piece of you? Or is this book going to be the thing that cinches you getting that gig or not getting that gig? And I know Joe Calloway used to say, oh, let me, you know, category of one or one of his books, oh, let me just overnight you my book. And he'd always have the deal because he was A, willing to overnight it, and B, the book was a good book. And people were really interested in reading that, and that got him the deal.
Right. Absolutely. Well, they see that you're following through on what you said you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And then you've boosted your credibility because you've shown yourself as the expert in whatever space it is.
Right, right. And that's also why you want to have a book that helps to support whatever you're doing in speaking, because we're building a platform of expertise here. So let's talk about the process of the book writing itself. What are some ways that you recommend your clients chunk out their time in order to do this? Because this is a pretty big undertaking, right?
One of the first things, and it feels a little bit like you're going back to English school, but English class, is to really do an outline, like a super thorough outline for your book, because that helps you think through your entire message. And if you're speaking, you've already got, you know, your outline for your talks may be incorporated into that. But then within that outline, going into each chapter and saying, okay, what stories do I have that I can include here? Or what research do I need to go find to support what I'm saying? You know, really chunking it down. To me, that's your map for being able to get where you're going faster.
Roadmap.
Without that, I think you get, you pause or you get slowed down because you're not exactly sure where to go next. So when you get stuck and you have your map, you can go back and say, okay, where's the next stop? Where are we going to?
So do you have any technology that you use for these roadmaps?
So personally, I like Scrivener. And I just map it out that way. I've seen everything from post-it notes all over the walls to binders to, you know, all kinds of things like that. But I like Scrivener. If you don't use Scrivener, I like the...
I'm showing her my giant post-it note the small post-it notes all over it because I'm mapping something out right now.
Yeah.
Now, Scrivener, I've checked out Scrivener before and visually it didn't appeal to me.
Do you
find that it's a little like bland? I was just, maybe there's another version of it that I haven't seen yet, because it was a long time ago that I looked at it.
What I use, and you can do a similar thing even in Word with a navigation pane. And so that just keeps my outline right in front of me.
Yes.
So that's how I use Scrivener. Now they do have like the bulletin board featured and those kind of things.
It might have come a long way since I used it last. I've heard a lot of people say they use it. So maybe I need to circle back. And we'll put things like this in the show notes. We can't put a link to Staples for post-it notes, but you'll figure that out. If I do it on a giant flip chart post-it note page, so I like the ones by 3M, with then smaller different color post-it notes underneath my three chunks. Now, let's talk about whether or not you like to set it out into chunks. How do you chunk it down? Do you like to have like 10 chapters? Is there a formula that you think really works well?
So Part of it just depends on your message. Like mm-hmm. you can kind of think through the things that you need to be able to include in the book. But when we get down, like when we're editing the book, what I don't love, and we do them occasionally, but I don't, it's not my favorite, is a book with like 30 to 50 chapters. Cause that just feels like a lot. Like if I'm a reader coming to it,
yeah,
that feels like a lot to have to wade through, even if it's not that long, if that makes sense. It's just the number.
Right.
So
overwhelming.
Right. So if I, when we have something like that, rather than just have the table of contents with 30 things, we will definitely break them up and we have to, may have to move them around
into sections. 1, 2, and 3 with 10 in each or something
because
like that.
It feels more doable.
Right.
You know, for the reader.
You know, in speaking, we deal in threes. And so when I've chunked my own books down, I've always put them into three. So in the Wealthy Speaker 2.0, it's ready, aim, fire.
Yeah.
In the Epic Keynote, it's ready, aim, speak. And that has given me so much clarity. Okay, what do you need to know in order to start your journey into the speaking business? You know, and that all goes under ready. And it just made it so much clearer in my own mind to be able to chunk things down. And
yeah, it gives you a focus.
Yeah, I probably could have had 30 chapters because I probably had 10 in each, but that was able to chunk it down and give me focus, yes. Have you seen people go away for like 2 weeks and write in a cabin? Have you seen, what are you seeing with your clients that seems to work really well? Is it a daily thing where you go off to another place? Let's talk about a few little writing hacks.
Sure. So I think part of that is just one, figuring out how you work best. So it's not the same thing's not going to work the same way for everybody.
Right.
I know some authors go literally to a coffee shop. I actually like to go to a coffee shop or someplace where there's some background noise. It's not so quiet as my house.
Yeah.
I actually do have a quiet house during the day. I know some people don't.
Yeah.
But where there's some background noise, it just kind of is a din that you can just focus in on what you're writing.
Right.
The going away for 2 weeks or that kind of thing, I think can be really helpful if you're really clear, like you know where you're going, or if you're like, this time I'm going to use like maybe a weekend. This is the time I'm going to use to outline my book and then come back to it once you've gathered all the pieces to write for that 2 week time. What I have seen is that consistency is what helps people move most quickly. So whether you're going to write every day or every weekend, whatever it is, doing it on a regular basis and not giving yourself a huge gap of time where you don't write.
Yes.
Is what makes
momentum
actually. Yes, it does. because you just get stuck and you have to go back and read where you were.
Yeah.
And then you waste a lot of time there. But if you stay in it, that to me, I've seen over and over again how that helps people stay focused and get done.
Yeah, and I have like a pretty poor memory. So even like a 4 day gap, I think probably I would kind of forget and then have to, you know, take some time to go over. So 2 weeks off, forget about it. It's not going to work for me. But I like the idea of, I think Sam Horn talks about it as being a third spot, you know, go to a coffee shop or somewhere other than your office, because chances are that all of your regular day-to-day stuff is going to get in the way at your office. And you're not good. And right, you know, you want to take yourself out of that environment to start to get the creative juices flowing. I like a coffee shop that's actually attached to a bookstore so that I'm looking out from my Starbucks into this chapter's bookstore. And that is like such an inspiration. And I might even go and walk up and down the aisles of the bookstore before I go and sit down with my laptop. But I have to find really comfy chairs because it's all about the bum.
How long can you sit there? That's it. That's
exactly,
true.
Exactly.
I used to think a library would be such a great place to write for that reason with the books, but none of my libraries that I was around would let us have drinks. And I want to have my water, my coffee or something, because I plan to sit there for several hours at a time if I'm going. So,
yes. And they have hard chairs at libraries too.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So
yeah, a comfy chair.
That would be out for me. But I did write, even though they had hard chairs, I did write a significant chunk of the first or second Wealthy Speaker, I can't remember, on top of a grocery store looking down at all of the activity in the grocery store. And that somehow inspired me. So you never really know what environment is going to do the trick for you. I think that's really neat. Now, you talked about three levels of editing. Let's talk about the different levels and what you should be doing as you are writing, because, oh my goodness, could we not just get into a vicious circle of going back and doing it again and again and again?
That's it. Because you'll never finish that way.
You'll never, and it won't be perfect. And we get caught up in perfectionism, which means it'll never get done.
So I always, my thought is, if you could just get it out on paper first, we can always fix it later. If I work as a developmental editor or content editor, and so my job is to help with the flow, the message, the meaning. Does it sound right? Are there any gaps or holes? So that, you know, if the reader's coming along and they're not familiar with your content, you know, are there gaps or holes? So,
Wait a second here. You missed something. Okay. I didn't understand, you know, what you need to go back and fill in a blank in the book that I as the reader didn't understand something.
Right. Gotcha. So, from there, once we have the message out on paper, and it can be really rough. I even had, so recently I worked on a book, and as I'm reading along, it did have chapters, but I'm thinking, this guy did not actually write the book. He must have just spoken it out, like using dragon speak or something. And because there were not proper sentence breaks, but two, there were words that sound like other words, and you're I see what happened here.
Yes.
So, but that's fine. As long as you have it out on the screen or on the paper so that we can work with it, mm-hmm. then it's fine. So that's what a developmental editor would do. The next level would be a copy editor. So the developmental editing process is a collaborative process where it goes back and forth between the editor and the author to get it into a final solid first draft. The copy editor then is looking for things like sentence structure and punctuation and, you know, style, like are we following the Chicago Manual style, which is typical for most books, or whatever style it is that your publisher's asking for. They're going to look at those kind of things.
Right.
And then we use a proofreader on the end of the project after layout, because things always look different. You always find typos that you didn't see before. So we have a third person come through, and it's that fine-tooth comb to really make sure that it's clean, so we don't have errors in the book.
Gotcha. So moving through the process, as you know, you think, oh, I've got my manuscript to the editor. Now I'm done. That's not really how it is, right?
No.
The process of back and forth and back and forth and negotiating and tweaking, and the heavy lifting might be done, but there's still a fair amount to do, wouldn't you say?
And, you know, it depends too, like how much you've written or what your writing skill is. And sometimes it can be quick, but if you are not a writer first, which is a lot of the people that I work with, they are an expert in something, but they're not a writer first.
Right.
And so it's no harm, no foul. We're just getting your content to really shine. We want your message to like promote you in the best possible way. We want it to put you in the best light. So I always give people the tracked version and a clean version. I always, always recommend that they only read the clean version. So read it, see if you like it. There'll always be comments and questions where I say, hey, I didn't understand this. Can you add some more here? Do you have a story that we could do here?
Right.
But ignore the edits.
Yeah.
Just read the clean version and you'll be much happier.
So I think that's a good way to go. And I think it can get very confusing if you're starting, well, why did they change that? Mm-hmm. And talk about murdering your darlings.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the thing. Everybody has phrases or stories or something that they love, that they want to share, they want to hold on to. And it just may not be relevant to your reader. As much as you love it, it may not be relevant or important to your reader. And maybe they've already bought the book, so it's not the same as the confused reader doesn't buy, but they may not get it. They may not follow the advice, or they may not, you know, whatever it is, it'll be a discount as opposed to a bonus. So,
all right. And the book that I want to reference on that, I think the person that I first heard that from was the book Bird by Bird. Is that Anne Lamott?
Anne Lamott, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a Virginia Woolf quote, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. So Anne Lamott, Monica will put that in the show notes. Bird by Bird.
That's a great book.
Was a really good book in terms of getting inspired to become a writer. And there were several things before the very first book that I wrote that I did to go and get myself educated on how to do this process. What do you think are some things that people can get inspired by? I took courses and things like that on how to write books, but and that book, Bird by Bird, really inspired me. What are some other things that people might do in order to get those creative juices flowing?
Sure. So I'll tell you another book that I do like too is Stephen King's On Writing. I don't really read Stephen King at all, but I liked his book on writing.
I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, because you see, and you're seeing the creative side of it, because even if you're writing nonfiction, it needs to be interesting, and having some stories and the storytelling aspect is very helpful. So yeah, books definitely can be something. I like retreats, writer's retreats.
Yep.
Because inevitably you hear something that somebody says, you're like, oh man, whether it's I want to do that too, or I want to be that too, or I have an idea and I can see that now how I can go for it. Those to me are so helpful. So we haven't held one in a few years. We'll get around to holding another one. We've moved in some different things.
Yeah.
We need to have, so we just moved to Ireland after Christmas.
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
So we need to have one here because it's beautiful. Yes. We should have it in a castle. I've already kind of been looking for the places that we need to have
it. What a great idea. Well, definitely let me know when you're
at
your castle writer's retreat. That's and we it. Will make sure we put a plug out onto social media for you.
Well, I like, though, getting away from something, you know, like getting out, because I think that's where those creative juices can get inspired. So
that makes perfect sense. So if somebody really is like, I am just not a writer, I struggle with writing. There are people that I've had as clients certainly who have said, this just isn't my bag. I don't want to write a book because I don't think I can, because they've struggled with it. Let's talk about the idea of ghostwriting, because that's something that your company does.
What it is?
What's the situation of somebody who hires you on as a ghostwriter?
So when we start with ghostwriting, what we do is a lot like that process where you have the outline. We go through and just really mine what it is that the book is going to be about.
Right.
And then depending on what the person has available. So some people have, maybe they've had blogs, or maybe they have transcripts from speaking presentations that we can draw from.
Right.
If there's nothing, we've done this a number of times where we start from scratch and we'll do a series of interviews based on that outline. Like, we have a really clear idea of what the book is about. We do a series of interviews. And then they then can have the manuscript to read, or the chapters as they come to read, and offer feedback on, which feels a less daunting to people who either just don't have the time or don't have the desire to write a book.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that if you gave, for instance, day-long workshops or two-day-long workshops, there's a ton of content that would go down in a two-day workshop.
Oh, yeah.
And then you would have a lot to work with. Okay, let's talk about the opposite, turning your book into a course. Have you had a lot of your clients do that?
They are starting to. So I work with a lot of educators, and they are starting to take their books and pull them apart as like Udemy-type classes or teachers pay teachers, you know, those kind of things. They're pulling them apart and using the chapters as the sessions, basically.
Yeah.
You can go through. And I always, whether you're making it a full-on course or offering a study guide, having something where people can interact with you, with the material, is important. It connects them to you in a different way. It allows for like book clubs or book groups, which again, it helps with the sales, because if you have somebody say, hey, we're going to have a book group, we're going to study this book, 20, 30, 50 people buy the book.
Right. So, what a great idea too, for any kind of learning, you know, get together with your friends and read this book together, and together you can probably learn more. That brought up an idea. Let's see if I can remember what it was, because I wanted to ask you. Rat. I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember it now. I think that we have given people a lot of, oh, I think it was probably back at online courses, but sorry, squirrel.
That's all right.
There goes the brain. I think that we've given people a lot of ideas on how to, you know, get started on their book. You know, for those of you who have been writing blogs and things like that, being able to go and draw from your own wisdom is such a great way. I mean, we could be repurposing just about everything that we do, don't you think?
That's it. And I think some people think that they have to start from scratch on everything, that, mm-hmm. that everything has to be brand new. And that's not the case, because even if people have read your blog, they haven't read it organized in the format that you're putting it together, you're going to add new stories in.
Right.
I'm not a fan, and I'll be honest about this. I'm not a fan of just taking the blog and putting it into a book. I know people do that.
Yeah.
I know some big names who do that, but it's not my favorite way, just because it feels a little disjointed.
Right.
But
if you kind of want to bridge it all together and make a smooth transition from place to place. Yeah, I understand that. And I think maybe chunking it down into like three main sections that all
has categories.
Yeah, that might help to, but yeah, I think there needs to be a little bit of work that goes into smoothing things out. And also adding more stories and things like that. One of the things that I really love that we have in the Wealthy Speaker 2.0 is I'd asked speakers to provide me with flashpoint moments in their careers. Those are moments where they propel forward significantly, you know, and so we have flashpoints kind of throughout the whole book. And I think that those are really inspirational, and the pull quotes, like people can kind of go into the little pieces and the little chunks of your book. And if they just cruise through all the pull quotes, for instance, they might be inspired one day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or have something to tweet about or post about, and that helps, you know, get your message out there some more. So
I remembered my thought from a while ago, and it was how much I love reading. Like, I don't actually collect books anymore. I used to, but now I do everything on my iPad. And I was curious, you know, what you thought would be the percentage of people who've maybe gone to iPad. I feel like I'm getting a lot more orders that way these days. But reading an iPad book can allow you to have it be interactive so much easier. Loved, love, love it. I've had a few where people have, you know, had videos, go see this video now, and, you know, that's going to follow up what we just talked about. That's pretty cool. What do you see? Is there a stat that you've had any time recently about what ebooks are doing these days?
You know, it's been increasing for such a long time. I don't know that it's, I don't think it's surpassed print books, and particularly for nonfiction. I think a lot of people, when they're reading nonfiction, they like to be able to mark and underline and highlight.
I have a ton of clients who say, I like to mark it up. And there's nothing that makes an author happier, in my mind anyway, that like dog-eared and post-it noted and highlighted. And I love it. That means you really used the book.
Right. However, I do love too, like on, so I read Kindle books and love it whenever you see, oh, that's been highlighted 15 times or 500 times. It's just so
very cool.
That's kind of fun to see that too. When somebody,
I don't know if they do that in iBooks. That's a neat little Kindle feature. Maybe I should transfer and start reading them over there, because then I might be more part of the community that's reading Kindle books, right? I don't know.
But I do, I mean, we do publish an ebook for just about, I mean, unless it's a children's book, I think we almost always do an ebook.
Yes.
To go along with the print book, because
for
you
sure.
just want to offer it in both formats. There are quite a few people doing audiobooks as well. And I don't think that they are as high a seller as some of the other books would be, but in the nonfiction space, they can be very valuable because people
coming on strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And people like to learn in different mediums. And I wouldn't even poo-poo the idea of the Kindle book for the kids, because that's how I've read to all the grandchildren on the iPad. And the very first book we have ever read together was on there. So I feel like that's just, I think that'll continue to grow more and more. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Erin. This has been incredibly informative. I hope for those of you who are thinking about a book, you've gotten some good ideas today, and maybe we've prompted you to get get your butt into action and take some action. Thank you, Erin Casey, for being here. If people want to get in touch with you, what should they do?
My Writers Connection is the best way. So we're on Facebook, My Writers Connection, Instagram, or just mywritersconnection.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Erin, for being here. And for those of you who are listening in, we are going all in on iTunes, and we'd really love for you to support us out there. Leave us a rating, a review, and definitely subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. We've got some really awesome things coming down the pike. With that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Show. Please visit speakerlauncher.com for your free Wealthy Speaker audit, and visit speakerlauncher.com/podcast for show notes and many more resources to help you catapult your speaking business. See you soon, Wealthy Speakers.